online
from New York City,
border to border,
and coast to coast.
You're connected with Tom Sullivan.
Yes, and thank you for connecting. Welcome, everyone, to the Big Radio Show. Happy Wednesday, 15th day of September, year of our Lord 2021. My name is Tom Sullivan. So we got a little bit of a surprise. We're ready to launch into the show here, and they have just started a briefing at the Pentagon. I don't know if they're going to bring up the big hullabaloo about the book. Bob Woodward has the new book out with Robert Costa and accusations about General Milley and whether it's true or not true. But so I don't know if that's what it's going to be about. But let's go to the Pentagon. John Kirby has just stepped to the microphone to take questions.
We'll take questions. Bob.
Hey, John. Thank you. I have a question for you on the August 29th drone strike in Kabul.
Yeah.
Was that vehicle tracked and targeted because of its activities and the belief that it was carrying explosives, or was it tracked and targeted because the driver was believed or known to be an ISIS operative?
Yeah, Bob, as you know, Central Command is continuing to assess this strike, and I just don't want to get out ahead of their work on this.
So you can't say what the reason for targeting it was in the first place?
I can't speak to that at this time. I'm going to let CENTCOM complete their work and then and let them speak to what they find as a result of that. I think that's the best course right now. Jennifer.
John, there are two allegations in the new Woodward Costa book that have to do with this building in particular, whether General Milley inserted himself into the nuclear launch process. Is there anything unusual that you've seen, or that is the Defense Secretary concerned about the reports that General Milley inserted himself into the, tried to stop the president at the time from having the ability to launch nuclear weapons? Can you explain how the process works? And it's been explained to us that he went and just went through, reviewed the procedures, and that he told them that he should be on any conference call with the president, that that's part of the procedures. Is that part of the nuclear procedures? I'm confused.
Well, I certainly can't speak to the revelations that are coming out in the book. I think you saw a statement by the chairman's office specifically addressing this issue. What I can tell you is that it is not uncommon at all for the department to continue to review security protocols, particularly when it comes to our strategic deterrence capabilities, that we constantly take a look at the protocols and the procedures to make sure that they are still relevant. And these protocols have been in place for a long time, a couple of decades, and so it's not uncommon. It's also completely appropriate, and again, I'm not speaking to the validity of things that are in the book, but it is completely appropriate for the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as the senior military advisor to both the secretary and the president, to want to see those protocols reviewed on whatever frequent basis that he wants to do that. So, again, I can't speak to the validity, but I see nothing in what I've read that would cause any concern.
What is the chairman's role in terms of the nuclear launch, if there were a nuclear launch by the president?
Well, the chairman is the key military advisor to the president, to the commander-in-chief. And in a sequence of events whereby a commander-in-chief would be making that decision, that most grave of decisions, the chairman would be intimately involved in that process, in providing advice and counsel to both the secretary and to the president. Obviously, the president in this case makes the final decision. And, you know, by statute, by law, he is the prime military advisor to the president, and this would be a military decision of profound proportions here and importance. So he would be absolutely involved in that process, soup to nuts.
And was there anything unusual said to the Chinese counterpart in the phone calls, as far as you understand?
Well, again, all I've seen is the same reporting that you've seen, Jen. I can't speak to the the specifics of the conversation, a conversation that took place, obviously, before before this administration took office. But I would add, if I may, again, that it is not only common, it's expected that a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff would continue to have counterpart conversations. I mean, he is basically the chief of defense for the United States. We don't call him that, but he has chief of defense counterparts around the world. And having worked for a chairman myself for quite a bit, I can tell you frequent communication with two countries like Russia and China is not atypical at all for a chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And those communications are they're routine. They're staffed, they're coordinated, and they're transparent, as transparent as they can be.
Would it also be routine in these counterpart conversations if the United States was planning to strike one of these locations for the chairman to inform his counterpart that the U.S. was about to strike, as is quoted in the report?
Yeah, again, I'm not going to get into the confirming or speaking to details in reporting.
Would that be a common part of these conversations, is if the United States was planning to conduct a strike on a location,
right,
would the chairman then call his counterpart to alert them to an incoming strike?
Without speaking to that hypothetical, what I would say is that these parts of the value, a part of the value of having these communications, particularly with countries like Russia and China, with which we are experiencing tension, is to try to reduce the risks of miscalculation and conflict, to try to take down tensions, to make clear what our national security interests are on you pick the issue. And that's the communication channel between our chairman and a chief of defense is a really key vehicle for transmitting and communicating those kinds of messages.
And then, has Secretary Austin, based off of the stories out of this book, has he instructed General Milley to change any of the ways that he's operating? Has he asked him to inform him more about some of the conversations that he's having? Has there been any practical change on this current
Pentagon
leadership?
Absolutely not. No, not in the least. Has full trust and confidence in Chairman Milley and the job that he's doing.
Laura. Hey, thanks, John. So just following up on the previous questions, as you said, by law, by statute, the chairman is not in the chain of command. So if these allegations are true, that General Milley said that he would give a heads up to the Chinese if we were going to strike them, would that not be undermining civilian control of the military?
Again, I'm not going to speak to unconfirmed reports from a book that we haven't looked at and read yet, and certainly not to a conversation that took place before the administration took office. I'm not going to go there, Laura.
I guess I can't really understand why you're not denying that that is happening, that that happens, since that's a pretty serious allegation.
I'm not speaking to it at all, Laura. It's not that I'm not denying it. I'm going to refuse to speak to specific anecdotes that are in this book. I'm in no position to do that, and I don't think it would be helpful for me to try to speculate one way or the other about the veracity of these anecdotes. What I can tell you is that chairman across multiple administrations routinely have communications, direct channel communications with their counterparts in other countries. And it is particularly important to have those communications with a nation state with which there are real and significant tensions, to try to reduce those, clear things up, make sure you reduce the risk of miscalculation. And I think you saw in the statement that the chairman's office that they put out earlier today that's exactly what was behind the context here for this particular call, which took place at a difficult time in our nation's history in this particular transition.
And sorry, just to follow up on that point, Acting Secretary Miller, told Fox News that he did not authorize the call. And another one of his deputy chief of staff also said that, in fact, it was the policy at the time that there was no senior government engagement with China. Is that true? But could that possibly be true?
I couldn't answer that. I mean, those were those were before, that was the time before we were in office. I can't speak to what the policies were for international communications were, but again, you saw it in the chairman's statement, why he was having these conversations, and you also saw in his statement that those communications were staffed and coordinated. I would point you back to what the chairman said. Yeah.
Thank you, John. So you said it's routine for the chairman to speak to counterparts in China and Russia. And in this context, the statement talked about strategic stability. So it includes issues related to nuclear capabilities. And you said you worked for a chairman. Can you help us understand, usually when these type of conversations at this level happen, does the chairman brief the president or get the green light from the president before such a conversation? Does he brief the president on the conversation? And does he get the green light from the Secretary of Defense or brief him after the conversation?
Yeah, it depends. I know that's not a great answer, but it's a true answer. I mean, we expect a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to coordinate and communicate with his counterparts. And some of those conversations are about very specific issues that have very, very high level interest, and there might even be a request made by the chairman to make a call. Sometimes the secretary could ask him to do that, or even representatives on the National Security Council could say, "Hey, wouldn't it? You know, we think it would be helpful if you reached out to your counterpart and relayed the following message." Sometimes the chairman will, you know, he'll be the one that come up with the idea, like, "Hey, I think I need to get on the phone with General or Admiral so and so and have a talk about this." But typically, regardless of the impetus for that kind of a call, it is read out. It is staffed. It's appropriately coordinated, and the chairman or the chairman's office will offer a readout of it up the chain of command so that everybody understands it. And then oftentimes, and you've seen this yourself, I mean, the chairman's public affairs office will release a public readout, not unlike the ones we do.
There's John Kirby talking about the big stink about General Milley and whether or not he made a phone call to China about Donald Trump wanting to launch a nuke war. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Keep doing what you're doing, Tom. I'm glad you brought this topic up.
Oh, Tom, you are so wise.
All right, so this wasn't even on our radar for today, but the Bob Woodward is out with a new book along with Robert Costa from the Washington Post. So they're both Washington Post guys, and they wrote a book that says that General Milley was involved in making a phone call to China because China was worried, or Milley was, somebody was worried. I haven't read the book yet. Woodward's pretty good about getting his facts straight, but he knows how to write a book that sells books. He knows how to sell, to make them controversial. So he says that basically Milley was worried that President Trump was going to launch a nuclear strike or some other surprise attack on China, and China was worried about this, and there was a phone call made, and well, that's how this whole thing came about. So now people are calling for General Milley to resign. For example, the guy who people in the Trump camp love to hate is retired Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who was one of the witnesses in the first impeachment of the president. He is now calling for the resignation of General Mark Milley if the secret phone calls with China, if that was true. Then at the news conference that is now finished at the Pentagon, a reporter said, asked General John Kirby, should General Milley be put on trial for treason? I thought Kirby was going to fall off the podium. So we pick it up from there with General Keane, who is now answering questions put to him by Martha McCallum. Let's listen.
I think some of that's is bizarre, to say the least. I don't believe it. But, I mean, here's the issue. Why is General Milley making a phone call? He's making it because I assume they picked up some intelligence and that the Chinese were expressing some concern. And so making a phone call, knowing we're not doing anything. By the way, I checked with a senior Trump official who would have been privy to any conversation concerning China during his time frame. There's no way he would have been outside of that discussion. No discussion taking place whatsoever. So the Chinese are reacting to some conclusions. And I would imagine our knowledge of that is quite sensitive in terms of the intelligence itself. But General Milley's making a phone call to provide reassurances, which is his job. I mean, he's executing his responsibility, and he's doing it in concert with his own advisors and then sharing that with the interagency. I don't know whether the interagency, of course, includes the National Security Council, you know, whether they briefed the president on this phone call or not. I mean, I have no idea about that, but not briefing him would also not be unusual. It'd have to do with the sense of urgency and what the issue was. But I take this at Milley's statement at face value. He's essentially trying to provide assurance, and evidently Secretary Esper, who had seen the same intelligence, this is prior to the first phone call, he wasn't around for the second, had the same concern, and he asked his policy people, you know, to get involved in talking to their counterparts as well. And I think these are responsible actions that are being taken, not the contrary. And based on what the Pentagon is reporting and the feedback we're getting from Jennifer Griffin, and I trust her and her sources, by the way, they've been impeccable in the past, and I take them at face value here. I don't see anything that's undermining the civilian control of the military. If you took the facts that are, I think, being sensationalized in this report, that would be an issue, as you just regurgitated here. But that is not what the Pentagon is reporting. It seems to be pretty much in sync with what we're used to seeing. The other thing is, I mean, I don't know how many times we got to learn this lesson, but it would be far better if people are serving in the government not to be talking to the media about things that are going on in the government, particularly such sensitive things as we're dealing with here, because they have a tendency to get completely out of context, as we're seeing here. The other thing is, I'm assuming that General Milley isn't coming forward himself, because he's going to deal with the issue on September the 28th. Right. With the senators, yep. And he probably doesn't.
All right, we have to.
Primetime, all the time, with Tom Sullivan.
Primetime it is. So this ruckus is all about, the reporting is that 2 days after the January 6th event at the Capitol, that General Mark Milley, the reporting is that he single-handedly took secret action to limit President Trump from potentially ordering a military strike or launching nuke weapons against China, according to a new book by Bob Woodward. Woodward wrote that General Milley, deeply shaken by the assault on the Capitol, was certain that Trump had gone into serious mental decline in the aftermath of the election, with Trump now all but manic, screaming at officials and constructing his own alternate reality about endless election conspiracies. So the reporting is that Milley was worried that President Trump could go rogue. He apparently told his senior staff in the book, it says, you never know what a president's trigger point is. So that's why Lieutenant Colonel Vindman says if it's true, Milley has to resign. And a reporter asked, is he going to be put up for treason? What do you make of this? 855-295-6600. James in Cleveland. Hello, James.
Hi, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing good.
Did I hear that guy that you were quoting, that you let speak? Did I hear him say that Millie was doing his job? Did I hear that? Did I hear that just now about 7 minutes ago? Did I actually hear an administration official, a military, whatever? I don't know who he was. You know who he was. You know who was.
That was John Kirby, retired admiral, spokesman at the Pentagon. Yes, that's what he said.
Did I hear him say that Milley was doing his job? Did I hear that?
Yes.
Did I hear that? I'm being sarcastic.
So,
yeah, he said it. That's the most disgusting, disgraceful, treasonous act I have ever seen.
Well,
I wore the uniform.
Let me expand.
I watched
let
my
me expand.
Brother die. No, you didn't.
You got to go back to the setup of what led up to him saying that, and it comes from the statement that General Milley has put out today, is that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs regularly communicates with the chiefs of defense around the world, including China and Russia.
So you can't defend treason. Will you stop it?
No,
will you stop it? You can't defend treason. Kirby and Milley should be facing a firing squad right now. I watched my brothers die in combat. And he's going to call the enemy and say, I'm going to let you know if anything go down. That man should have already resigned. He should have resigned at 9 o'clock this morning, and he should be court-martialed, and he should face a firing squad. He wasn't doing
his James.
Job. It ain't his job
James.
To call a foreign government.
James. You're interrupting me.
Yeah, James. James. How do you know it's true?
Bob Woodward said it's true. I don't know what's true. I don't know if COVID-19 is true. You think it's true? How do we know it's true? I know.
Well, I think there's evidence.
You heard him say it.
Yeah. So what do you want to do to find? How are you going to find out if? How are you going to find out if this is true before you string them up?
Why don't you ask him the question? Not Kirby, silly Milley. Did you make the phone call? Yes or no? Is Bob Woodward a liar? Yes or no? I don't want to hear from some low level retired idiot moron. He wasn't doing his job. It ain't his job to put my brother's life on the line for some political crap. I can't believe I'm living in the United States of America anymore.
Yeah, well.
How much more do Democrats have to tell America that they hate America? What else has to happen?
I don't know if General Milley is a Democrat. I'm not sure.
How many times do they have to tell America they hate America?
Yeah. I don't know what party he belongs to. I thought you started the call by saying that you had settled down. What happened? Sounds like you're getting worked up again.
I got wound up again. I'm not going to apologize.
No, you don't need to.
You basically trying to defend him by asking him, how do I know it's true? How do we know anything's true? How do we know that COVID-19 is actually COVID-19? That it's not just the Spanish flu? How do we know that? See, that's what set me off was when you said that. How do we know that's true? Well, la-di-da. How do we know anything is true?
I know. We don't. I don't know if there was a George Washington. I never met the man, so I'm not sure he really existed. I got to go. James, I appreciate the call. Can I take a break here? Can I? No, you can't. What are you doing with that? Where'd you get that from? So this is the statement from the state from the Pentagon, statement by Joint Staff Spokesperson. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs regularly communicates with chiefs of defense across the world, including with China and Russia. These conversations remain vital to improving mutual understanding of U.S. national security interests, reducing tensions, providing clarity, avoiding unintended consequence or conflict. That's basically what Admiral Kirby just said. So this is a regular, ongoing relationship. Now, what took place on that conversation? Apparently, there are quite a few, something like 15 people that were on that call from our side that knows all about it. Would not be surprised if this doesn't lead. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. No, no. I take that back. I'll be surprised if it does lead to a big congressional hearing, because Milley is working for Biden. Biden just came out today and said, "I have full faith and confidence in General Milley." The Congress and the Senate and the House are controlled by Democrats, so they're not going to have a big investigation into what General Milley said or did not say. Nobody's going to subpoena him. The chairman of the committees are the only ones who can issue subpoenas. So I think this is all about selling Bob Woodward's book. Now, I have a lot of confidence that Woodward gets great information, and by and large, it's proven to be, people scream about it sometimes, but I don't think anybody's ever been able to point out errors. Now, maybe there's been some, I'm sure there's been some, but so at this point, it appears as though General Jack Keane was even pointing out this is kind of what they do. They talk to each other. But did it, in fact, was it in response to January 6th, did he say, you never know what a president's trigger point is? Was he worried that President Trump could go rogue? The writing talks about the fact that he was certain that Trump had gone into serious mental decline. So at this point, the question then becomes, if he did do all of that, I'm leaning in favor of, yeah, he probably did say that.
Opinions that matter. Radio that makes you think.
Well, what do you think? So now General Milley, people are calling for his resignation. Others are, a reporter asked, should he be put on trial for treason? This is a book written by Woodward. Is it? Do we know it's true? The reason why I think it might be is because Woodward does do a thorough job of getting his facts. Secondly is, John Kirby did not come out and say, absolutely, that is false, that never happened. He dodged it by saying, well, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs regularly calls defense chiefs in other countries. That's something that's regularly done for all these various reasons. So he's basically saying, yeah, phone calls were made, and I'm not going to tell you what was in the phone call. So I'm going to guess there's some truth to this. 855-295-6600. Alexis in Colorado Springs. Hello, Alexis.
Hi, Tom. It's pardon me if I'm a little bit nervous. I don't listen very often, but I thought I'd tune in. And I was just really disturbed by the previous caller. I just felt like he was really highly emotional and just going out there in nowhere land.
James.
And I'm an independent. Right, yeah. And so I understand the concern for General Milley, but I understand what he did. You know, someone, if there's a concern regarding our commander-in-chief and his emotional state, I feel that we really need to have generals that will step in to protect our country. And I feel that for those who are accusing him of treasonous behavior, I think it's too early for that. Donald Trump has said a lot of things and have done a lot of things to erase that, you know, that concern regarding his mental state. And why I do support some of the things that he's done, there are some things that are of concern. And I'm very disappointed at the respect and the uproar that General Milley is getting regarding his effort in ensuring the safety and protection of our country.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, Alexis, but you also, I'm sure, appreciate that the head of our military is a civilian. The defense secretary is a civilian. They're stretching that lately, and that the commander-in-chief is the president of the United States. They don't want the military running our country. So this, and everything in the military is about chain of command. And so the boss is the president. So you bring up a very good question. What is the procedure for a concern about the mental health or the physical health of a president? And we do have a procedure. It's called the 25th Amendment. I mean, it's Congress works slowly, but the procedure would be to go to Congress and say, I have a concern to the chairman on the Senate committee and the House committee that oversees the military, and go through them. But for a military general to take things into his own hands, unless he felt it was literally an emergency, is out of line. Is totally out of line.
So for the 25th Amendment, and part of my ignorance here, is that implemented through the Senate, through Congress?
It's oh boy, now you got me. I have to look it up, but it was there's a requirement that you get the at least half of the members of the president's cabinet. I've got to look it up, and I believe you also have to get the leaders of the Congress, both the Democrat, Republican for the Senate, Democrat, Republican for the House, and they have to agree that the president is not capable of running as mentally or physically, and therefore the vice president would step in to be the president temporarily. That's
okay,
roughly the 25th Amendment.
Therein lies in the problem. If the majority is of the same party as the president, and if there is fear in terms of their future in the political position, then that's just not going to work. It's not going to.
Yeah.
And then we have to fall back on the generals. So there you have it. So
yeah, let me read it. 25th Amendment says the president becomes unable to do his job, then the vice president becomes president or acting president. It has never been used, and I have to dig into it a little bit deeper here to get there are definitely hoops you have to go through, because they don't want to make it easy to just remove a president.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We haven't been faced with it, but I think someday we will. Yeah, I just do. I mean, there have been members of Congress that have come down with heavy cases of dementia that have finally stepped aside. There are judges in mental capacity problems. So maybe this all needs to be revisited. But
yeah, anyway. And then your input has given me another perspective on it as well. So that was pretty much my comment.
Thanks, Alexis.
Thanks so much.
I like your call.
Thank you.
You bet. Appreciate the call. You bet. Let me see here. Section 4. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments, in other words, the vice president and at least half of the cabinet people, or of such other body as Congress may by law provide, transmit to the president pro tem of the Senate and the speaker of the House, their written declaration, the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties. The vice president shall immediately assume the powers and duties of the acting president. 855-295-6600. Teresa. Terry, I'm sorry. Terry, welcome. Hi, you're on the Tom Sullivan Show.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I just had a question. Why would Nellie call the China just to tell them, I'll give you a call should the order come through, instead of waiting for the order to come through and call them then? Is China getting ready in case, you know, it happens? Is that it's a heads up kind of thing?
Well, that's the question being kicked around is, did Milley warn China that we're about ready to do something? Yeah, I mean, that's even more egregious in my mind. I don't know what the truth is here, but I got the feeling that somebody's going to want to hear from General Milley directly. And I am guessing, since Democrats are in charge of the White House and the House and the Senate, that Milley's somewhat protected from having to actually show up under oath. But I got to hit a break. Harry, sorry, but we got to run. Thanks.